I am Frank Vaughn. It is Monday, August 31st, 2026. I'm going to begin today doing something popular, which is picking on Canadians and our abysmal and superficial understanding of how the relationship with the United States actually works. First thing I tweeted today is Canada literally invents written languages with which to rename its roads and bridges, which no one can read, let alone pronounce. And everyone's like, yay, it's amazing. The same people are losing their minds over Lake Ontario when it doesn't even affect what Canada calls it. So the Americans can call Lake Ontario whatever they want. They can call it Lake Ding Dong Head if they want to, and there's nothing we can do about it. And Google might update it to say that it's contested, but Canadians can keep on calling it whatever they want. And in fact, we love to rename roads. Check out this meme. Sometimes memes are all you need. Trutch Street to Suitsic McDonald Boulevard, something you can understand, to Milewakoffman Road. Abinajuju McKenna Kitchy Zibby McCann. We've got a park in Winnipeg named after the founder of Pakistan. What are we doing in this country? We're renaming everything. We're removing our prime ministers from public discourse. We're erasing John A. McDonald. We're erasing history. We're erasing Ryerson and calling it something else. Where we erase Dundas Square, and everybody applauds because it's so woke and wonderful. And the people, and I think this is really symbolic and meaningful, that they're trying to appeal to, that they're virtue signaling to, are offended by the virtue signaling. Look, I saw a picture where in Ontario, of all places, I look at my former MPP, David Piccini. He's part of the PC government. And every single time they do an announcement, every single time they do anything, they have to do the somber thing. They put their hands in front of their crotches and they bow their heads and they do their little land acknowledgement. And I got to tell you, those land acknowledgements, that's exactly how a sociopath would design a setup so that they could signal that they feel something when actually nobody even cares. In fact, I've often thought of politics as being systematized sociopathy. But look at this, SXW, like we got X to the power of W. This is like some kind of African click language, you know? And this is what we could come up with for the native peoples. It's mind-bendingly stupid. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't reconcile anything. Not even the people at Targets can actually identify what street they're trying to go to. Everybody uses the old language. When they sing the national anthem at sports stadiums, they still sing in All Thy Sons, because all of the language nonsense in the world can't actually fix anything. And here's another one. Canadian leftists, who are making headlines around the world again, want to use Great Lakes Seaway as a weapon against the U.S. Scroll all the way down. You know, it's good to see somebody writing about this, but it would be even better to see Canadian media writing about it. The United States also controls at least two locks on the same waterway, which Canadian ships use regularly. The U.S. government waived collections of tolls on the Seaway back in 1986, meaning Canada is the only country that collects tolls, but this could be easily changed. So the Americans not only control a bottleneck, they could shut the whole thing down and it wouldn't hurt them half as much as it would hurt us. It's a cell phone. Once again, it's Canada that's charging tolls. It's Canada that's charging taxes. It's Canada that's charging usage fees. Canada loves tariffs. We charge the world all kinds of money to do business here, and we charge the Americans far more than they've charged us in the past. There are people, if I go back to this, where is it? Canada Corps says, different story when a foreign country decides to rename a body of water that is 52% in another country. Any practical effect? No. Similar symbolism to the 51st state talk, though, that led to a trade war. The 51st state talk did not lead to the trade war. It's the Canadian government's attitude towards the United States which led to that trade war. It's the unfair balance of tariffs and taxes between the two nations that led to the trade war. It's the overrunning of Canadian society by security threats from Chinese to Khalistanis, running the gamut of security threats. It's our drug problem. It's our mass scale export market in finished narcotics that we send to the world. Those are the things that caused this problem. Our rhetoric inflamed it. Now, I'm going to be critical of Donald Trump and some of his policies in this video, so don't think I'm just some kind of MAGA sycophant, because I'm not. MAGA hates me, at least what's left of it, because I'm very critical of the Iran war, and I talk about the bleak financial picture and the bleak destiny of the U.S. dollar. But I'm also realistic enough to understand that the U.S. dollar system underpins Canada. 71% of our reserves are held in U.S. dollars. I mean, we depend on the United States for defense, for our financial system, to backstop our dollar, for trade surpluses and capital we desperately need because everybody's trying to get their money out of this country because of the nonsense Doug Ford and Mark Carney and every other prime minister has been doing for a decade. It's like Canada's Hotel California for your money. You can check out, but you can never leave. We dictate what people can do with their money. So we desperately need that capital. We screwed this up by letting our society fall into decline. And once again, it's stated for the record, I think that this spat between Canada and the United States is useless. It's anti-people. It's anti-economics. It's anti-pension. It's anti-real estate values. It's anti-common sense. And I believe it actually further enables the integration of North America in the long run, which all of the elbows up people think they're fighting. I think it's the objective of the Carney government. I don't think they're fighting against it. I think they're just manipulating you, making you a victim of the big red machine. And I think the big red machine deserves a lot of respect for it. Not like respect, because it's the most powerful political force on the planet outside of North Korea. The Black Pen says, now fire up those brain cells and try to pinpoint the difference between the two. He's talking about the language changes on the roadways and Donald Trump. And I said, one is patronizing and empty virtue signaling that does nothing, speaking of road renaming. And the other is a dude whose presidency is in trouble. It is trying to troll his way to victory. One is far more retarded than the other. And it's the one that involves a fake alphabet nobody can read. You see, Canada puts a lot of time and energy, resources and money into this nonsense. Trump just makes a social media post and issues an executive order. It literally costs him a signature, and it makes everybody go crazy. I mean, Canadians might be the last ones to truly keep feeding the troll, because the American public is turning on the president, and that's just a fact. He can threaten to arrest people for publishing polls all he wants. There's reasons for this. Let's start with Donald Trump's truth. Breaking news. The United States of America has just entered into agreement with the country of Venezuela on the biggest oil deal in world history. It's always so big with Trump. It's huge. At my direction, Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, working closely with the highly respected interim president of Venezuela, Delcy Rodriguez, and through a partnership with private business, have secured majority U.S. control of more than 65 billion barrels of proven oil reserves in Venezuela at no cost to the American taxpayer. The historic transaction more than doubles American oil reserves, greatly increases our oil supply, and will substantially lower gas prices for all Americans long into the future. It'll definitely be long into the future, because if it even happened, it wouldn't be until deep into the future. We're hoping to continue to set Venezuela on a course toward tremendous success and great prosperity. The transaction will greatly strengthen the already growing relationship. Somewhere else, he says he's going to begin filling the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. But let's go to the journals. Let's go to the journal. This is the American Journal of Transportation. They know something about gas. What would it take to bring Venezuela's oil output back to 3 million barrels a day? Rystad Energy believes that around $53 billion of oil and gas upstream and infrastructure investment is needed over the next 15 years just to keep Venezuela crude oil production flat at 1.1 million barrels a day. The United States is short about 6 million barrels a day. Yes, they're net exporters, but their refineries require the importation of roughly 6 million barrels from other sources because they don't have what they need for those refineries. You see, oil is a global market, and oil comes in vastly different grades. And Venezuelan oil is of limited utility for a number of reasons. I'm going to keep reading. Moreover, we estimate that only 300,000 barrels a day of additional supply can be restored within the next 2 to 3 years with limited incremental spending. So 300,000 barrels a day, that's the low-hanging fruit that they can grab onto over the next 2 or 3 years will not solve the decline in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which is what this was. This was an announcement over the weekend to try and tame oil markets. But then the United States decided they were going to bomb Iran again, and then Iran fired back, and so now oil prices are up anyway. This was just the latest attempt of the Trump administration to try and manipulate markets. And at this point, if you're denying that that's what they're doing, you're not in a good relationship with the facts. Going beyond 1.4 million barrels per day level is possible, but would require a stable investment of $8 to $9 billion per year from 2026 to 2040 on top of hold flat capital requirements. Venezuelan crude oil production could then recover to 2 million barrels a day by 2032 and 3 million per day by 2040. So this is not a short-term fix. This isn't going to help you now. And the peak oil production for Venezuela happened a long time ago, decades ago, at 3 million barrels per day. And you have to look at U.S. refining capacity and what they can take, have to be retooled for that Venezuelan oil. And you also have to look at the fact that if you start dumping Venezuelan oil into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, you have oil of multiple different grades, two different grades. You'll have separation. It's just, you can't just dump it in there. All oil's not the same. And if you were to read through this entire article, which, I mean, the thing is this stuff is not getting picked up fully by anybody. Even anti-Trump CBC, Trump's Venezuelan oil deal, what we know and how it could impact Canada's oil industry. It's not doing anything right away. And even though this article is decently well-written and has some facts in it, it doesn't get into the nitty-gritty details of how what Trump is claiming that this will solve an immediate problem is impossible. Now, on screen is what markets are doing right now. And of course, oil futures are going up, but this isn't the real price. There's a little term called a crack spread. So the price of gasoline and diesel is not reflected in the price of a barrel of oil. This is fakery, but you can make a lot of money on fakery. Now, I celebrated the president the first time around because not only did he not take a wage out of the White House, he actually lost money. His companies and his business interests lost value while he was president. It was actually a sacrificial presidency. This time round is very different. This is from oilprice.com. Trump complained about big oil profits but dumped Exxon stock on ceasefire day. President Donald Trump investment accounts sold between $500,000 and $1 million of ExxonMobil stock on April 7th, the same day Trump announced a ceasefire in the Iran war and hours before Exxon shares opened 6.5% lower. This is one trade out of hundreds of trades that have been mapped. I've been watching it happen in real time. The Trumps and their friends are making enormous amounts of money this time with insider information about what the White House is thinking. Whether Trump is leaking it directly or not, doesn't much matter. Somebody in the White House has got a group chat somewhere, texting with people who are making inside bets minutes and hours before Trump makes major policy decisions. And this is, look, I believed in many of the things that were promised during the election. That's why I've had a problem this entire time with all of those promises being broken. From Epstein, which people seem to have forgotten. I haven't been able to forget it for the last 20 years. I'm not about to forget it now. I can't forget it. To the war, to the basically the abandonment of the idea of a Department of Government efficiency, the idea of auditing the gold at Fort Knox, the idea of doing anything to tackle the national debt. I know Vance went on the record. I've got an article here I've been meaning to talk about, saying that Bessent has a very discreet plan to shrink $40 trillion national debt. It's so discreet, in fact, that it just doesn't exist. The United States is running roughly a $2 trillion deficit. It's probably going to be even bigger because the war is not over. The Hormuz Strait is not open in spite of what the Trump administration would love you to believe. Here he is. Trump insists Iran is dead. Hours after the United States resumes strikes, all they have is a good line of bullshit. It's a sad thing to say, and it really is a sad thing to say. But the real bullshitter when it comes to this is Donald Trump, and the only question is why? Why is he so full of it when it comes to Iran? Is he getting bad information? Does he know that he's bullshitting? Or is he or has he been successfully deceived by the people around him? Look, that's what happened the first time. I said this during the first administration. I said, if Trump's views are genuine and his objectives are something that he really wants to see happen, all the people who are conspiring against him have to do is keep his attention focused in the wrong direction for the next 4 years. And that largely ended up happening through different means. I think it's happening again. So he says here, Iran is officially a failed nation. It's not true. Remember, they told us within 24 to 48 hours of the now 184-day-old war, the Iranian regime was going to fall spontaneously. They killed the first wave of leaders and the second wave of leaders and the third wave of leaders. Trump went on stage and he said, we've killed everybody. And yet Iranian society continues to tick along. If you want to prove that Trump's words are false, all you have to do is go on YouTube and look at various people who are traveling around Iran right now. You can still go there. Did you know that? You can go there and you can film and you can post videos of what you see there. The people are fed. It is true. One of the things he says is that inflation is at 300%. It's not quite at 300%, but it's a nice big number, and Trump likes his big numbers, so that he will always take the biggest possible number, and that's what he will run with, because he's a messaging guy. He's a salesman. That's what he does. But the reality is, even though it's true that the Iranian currency is in decline, it's nowhere near as bad as it was in 2014, when there was a different president doing the different set of ultimate sanctions. The decline in living standards was worse then than it is now under war and so-called economic destruction, or whatever the economic D-Day we're on right now. I'm sorry, we're calling it Operation Economic Outcast. And today, by the way, they updated their language. Besant said we're going to do economic violence next. Does that involve the bombing of oil infrastructure in Iran? That will surely lead to the bombing of oil infrastructure in the Middle East, something the world cannot afford. This is all very bad. The article from Jeffrey Sachs, admittedly it's opinion, but it's a good opinion, the looming failure of Operation Economic Outcast. The latest package of U.S. sanctions on Iran is unlikely to achieve Washington's objectives. Why? Because last week, Pakistan announced that it will not comply with the latest sanctions. They're just not going to participate. And while the United States has been picking on Egypt, targeting them for limited sanctions against their banks to test the water, the rest of the world, Pakistan, as well as China, have told the United States to pound sand. They're not going to stop trading. They'll just settle in yuan. The title, Operation Economic Outcast. This is what's happening to the United States dollar system. And if you wonder why I care so much about what's going on in the United States, just watch my previous few videos where I detail the entire Canadian fiat money scheme that we depend on is backed by the U.S. dollar. It's the same in Europe. It all leads back to the USD. And so when I see the administration and the U.S. government going further and further into debt with no plan how to get out, the deindustrialization process still ongoing, the strategic petroleum reserve in decline, forcing nations to settle transactions internationally more and more via other means outside the U.S. dollar system. When I see central banks around the world now holding more gold than they are treasuries, when I see Japan on the verge of dumping their treasuries to the point where the United States has to intervene to get them to stop, and then I see the British going through the same thing, I see the unfolding, potentially multi-year end, it might not be tomorrow morning, but it's happening before our eyes, the end of the U.S. dollar as the global reserve system. And what do you think happens to the financial structures that have built themselves upon the USD? There are people in the United States, there's people in Canada. You think this is brilliant 5D chess. They don't seem to understand that the end of that system in a disorderly decline as we're heading towards because of the Iran war will wreck their savings, will wreck their pensions, that there will be pain. People think the golden era is here because Trump says it. But underneath the hood, you need to understand. Besant to unveil weekly Iran-related secondary sanctions after first round falls flat. The U.S. Treasury Department plans to roll out new secondary sanctions every week to intensify economic pressure on Iran. You're going to see a lot more of these every week. So they're going to try and sanction nations that have already been under sanction for 12 years. You know, Iran's been under sanction just about every year of its existence. that the biggest uptick in sanctions on Iran occurred under Obama. All of these mealy-mouthed words that Bessent and the Trump administration is saying about there's never been harsher sanctions before, the toolbox is empty. That's why the Pakistanis, that's why the Chinese are telling the Americans to pound sand. It doesn't work. But this is all the United States has at its disposal, because a military solution is not on the table. There is no way to end the Iranian regime. There's no way to invade Iran via ground forces and actually hold on. The United States does not have enough troops in theater to even try. And the logistics chain, as I've covered before, that keeps... Somebody said something very wise, and that is that the U.S. Navy is a logistics company. But that logistics company is failing in real time. Can't keep their ships supplied. They have to extend everybody's service because there's no boats there to replace them. The Abe Lincoln is getting extended again. I think they're going to try a military maneuver. I don't think it's going to work. I think they'd like to get past the midterms, but I don't think the Iranians are going to let them. I think Iran will open up a can of destruction before the midterms to force the U.S. hands to try and undermine and hurt Trump. And I think they will be successful. The only question I have is, with Trump's approval ratings now sitting over 2/3 of Americans disapprove of Trump's handling of Iran war, as 4 in 5 say the war has increased food and gas prices, the American public, even the American public that supports Trump, is figuring out that every time they go to the gas station, something is wrong. Costs have gone up, not down. Main Street is hurting. And I don't know if that's going to translate into them showing up to vote for the Democrats. It might just show up in repressed Republican numbers during the midterms. The fact is, the Democrats are playing with members in their caucus of such an extreme form of socialism that it's like they got an easy win. They got low-hanging fruit, but they're playing with this leftist extremism, which might be enough to make sure they can't capitalize. That's the only thing that remains to be seen. But for certain, the Republican Party is weak because the Trump administration has not kept its promises. Another thing the Trump administration, before it was an administration, when it was just Donald Trump running for elections, used to criticize the Biden government for doing, is revisions to the job numbers. And here's the headline. The U.S. created 79,000 fewer jobs than previously reported, new revisions suggest. So there's this tendency that continues under both parties to overstate economic growth in a given month or in a given quarter, and then to revise it down the road when nobody's looking. And it works. It pulls the wool over the eyes of the public. Look, we're in a situation in the world where the conversation is not whether Canada's worse or better, whether the United States is worse or better, whether Europe is worse or better. That's the wrong framing. It's the wrong competition. We're all in the same bed. We're all on the same plane. It's like you got two hands that are full of gangrene and you're arguing about which one is rotting faster. It's not solving the problem. And on top of all of that, you have an unending stream of BS coming out of the White House, as well as coming out of Parliament, as to the actual real situation. And the public, a large portion of the public, seems to want to swallow it continually. And I struggle with this, because I'm trying to communicate the other side of it. There's so much of it to communicate. And I feel like I can't reach people. I feel like people don't want to hear the truth. I keep getting sent videos which spell out fantastic narratives that make it sound like this is all one great big master plan. We're all going to live happily ever after. And it doesn't matter, doesn't seem to matter, how much time I put into factually parsing everything and then trying to communicate it. I still get the same messages from CLEAR. What I see is CLEAR intelligence operations. As a matter of fact, just a small sample. MAGA influencer outed as Pentagon employee in bizarre turn after botching scoop State Department Spock's Gaver. Jenica Pounds, a.k.a. Data Republican, a Department of War employee. Now, as much as Trump urges the FCC to probe media polling, punish NBC moderators, so he's going after this person, but he's not going after the people who are revising the employment numbers. He's not going after the Pentagon for putting fake news online and paying people. He's not going after the people who frequented Jeffrey Epstein's island. He's not putting them in jail. He's not disrupting foreign interference in his own government any more than Canada is. We have a problem. They have a problem. And everybody seems content with it. As a matter of fact, the United States is taking their foreign interference problem and codifying it to make sure that it can never be dealt with. And of course, we're talking about the little country that's the size of New Jersey that has dragged the United States into this mess in the Middle East. The Pentagon secretly hires conservative influencers to amplify Pete Hegseth's agenda. So I'm not going to get into whether or not Pete Hegseth is running for president. Honestly, I couldn't care. I don't think it's going to happen. I think he's going to be the fall guy out of this. But Pentagon records reviewed by the Washington Post show that both have active official government email addresses as of this past week and are assigned to the office of Anthony Tata, the Undersecretary of Defense. Influencers include Rob Manis, a retired Air Force colonel, and Kirk Schlichter, a retired Army colonel. I wouldn't be surprised if they're doing this on the other side, too, that some of the people that we listen to that are in opposition to the president are there to shape the opposition. Controlling both sides is as old as time. It's timeless. It goes back before Machiavelli. The best way to control the public is to make sure you control both sides of the debate to create a false dichotomy. It happened in Africa under Milner and Rhodes. It's happened so many times. I don't want to get into a history lesson because we're going long. But it was supposed to be better than this. The promise of the campaign was an orderly transition to a post-US dollar reserve world, an answer to the Epstein problem, an answer to the United States Empire and how unaffordable it was. It looks like what the United States is trying to do is maintain everything. He's called the Persian Gulf American territory. He's on Truth Social, spouting fantastic plans about what Venezuelan oil is going to do for the United States, which is factually incorrect. What happens when there's a change of administration in the United States? Do you think the Venezuelans who have been coerced into this position are going to honor their obligations? Could we look back in history and learn some lessons about previous governments, previous arrangements that Venezuela has made with U.S. companies? Who built the infrastructure in Venezuela in the first place? And was it lost, or has it been under the same control this entire time? Did the Chavistas throw off the yoke the same as they will in the future? It's the same government. It's the exact same government that was under Maduro. Regime change under coercion like this will not last. He's talking about the Persian Gulf as U.S. territory and how cheap things are going to get and how America is going to control all the oil coming out of the region. Well, Iranian oil goes primarily to Europe. It also goes to China, goes to other places around the world. Those places aren't just going to sit idly by in a world where the United States is making itself a pariah and just allow the United States to have unfettered access. Just to finish with a reminder, this economic blockade that the United States is running, Bessent's sanctions, where the Pakistanis and the Chinese, two of the most important players at the table, are telling him to pound sand, shows you that American soft economic power is lacking, is of very little effect, decreasing every day they try it. And their military has been stalemated by a so-called dead nation. That's what's really happening. And this is at a time when we desperately need to start focusing on our own prosperity, because it is true. The United States and Canada, we don't build nearly enough. And it's not going to be a quick transition if we want to start building things again, if we want to make ourselves resilient, if we actually want to see Fortress North America. We can't build Fortress North America over there. Did you know that I have a website, frankvaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again? And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link in one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.